This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is USDA Deputy Secretary Stephen Vaden. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of U.S. farmers online at syngentaforag.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Deputy Secretary Vaden next. At Syngenta, we talk to U.S. farmers and growers every day to hear their concerns and help them meet their challenges. From research and development to create innovative products to digital solutions to reduce water use and create healthy soil, we work hand in hand with America's men and women who feed and power the world. Our highly skilled teams are the forefront of connecting technology to utilize mobile apps, aerial imagery, and other advances to enable farmers and growers to make smart application and buying decisions for their farms. When our farmers have a successful crop, we all benefit. The Syngenta team is proud to work alongside farmers to help them make the best decisions for their farm. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at syngentaforag.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. U.S. Department of Agriculture is working on many fronts on behalf of farmers, ranchers, and consumers of the country. Deputy Agriculture Secretary Stephen Vaden says in 2026, the formalities will be concluded and the reorganization of the agency will begin, including the transition of staff to regional hub locations.
Number one, putting finishing touches on our plans and our timeline to carry it out this calendar year, 2026. And number two, listening to feedback. We had a 60-day comment period from the general public, and then we had a special and legally required tribal consultation period. We've issued reports on what the general public had to say. We'll be issuing a report in the coming weeks about the tribal consultation. We've taken all of that into account, but now we're moving into the action phase. And I can tell you, Jeff, that the first thing that I did on returning to USDA after the holidays was sign a memorandum authorizing the Department of Agriculture to begin to enter into leases for our new office space. And indeed, we have already begun to get those leases taken care of in Kansas City, taking some space that was formerly held by the GSA, the government landlord itself, that it no longer needs. Already the furniture is there. I toured this back last year. So USDA is moving forward. And as we go forward in the next couple weeks, you'll see more announcements as we move these items from plans to actions. By the time we get to the end of this calendar year, you will see USDA employees setting in offices in our new hub locations and working from there.
Devil's advocate, should this have gone before Congress?
Well, it has gone before Congress in the sense that they've had an opportunity to put any riders they wish on our budget. They've declined to do so. And it's gone before Congress in the sense that we need to do this to stay within the budget that we already have. We've got more than $2 billion in backlog maintenance for the buildings that we currently occupy in Washington, D.C. And none of those buildings is even 60% occupied. The South Building, the largest of all of them, is on an average day about 35% occupied. No business in the world would run in that fashion, and we certainly can't run in that fashion at a time when the taxpayer dollar is being monitored much more closely. So what we're doing is we're cutting our costs, we're cutting our footprint, and we're putting our employees in a place where government salaries can go farther, and they can have a home with a yard and a commute of 20 minutes or less, all of which is currently impossible in Washington, D.C., while saving the taxpayer money.
Considering the status quo of keeping it the way it is right now and then transitioning as you have plans to the hubs, how much money do you save?
I think the overall long-term savings, as we've said, go into the billion. We save $2.2 billion in backlog maintenance right there. In addition, These employees who will be located in buildings which are cheaper to maintain because they are newer will be located in regions of the country where the cost of living is less. So as we slowly begin to fill those offices and as we hire new people as needed to fill those offices, there will be some savings on the personnel end as well because the cost of living adjustment is less in Raleigh, North Carolina than it is in Washington, D.C. Then when you think about the fact that these are locations where the cost of living is less and turnover over time should be less because the government salary goes further there, that means less hassle and less expense in terms of constantly having to rehire new people to fill positions in Washington, D.C. in buildings that are antiquated and where the average commute stretches to an hour or more.
How many employees do you lose, and is there a fear of losing that brain trust of the Department of Agriculture experienced with working in agriculture policy?
So this has been the primary concern, and I think we look at it in two ways. First, over the long term, we need to be in non-Washington, D.C. locations so that we have people who are willing to stay with the department for decades. We need that experience. The American farmer needs that experience at work for him or her. Currently, we have a situation when you look across the department that there are key people who have been with the department for decades, and yet, when you look at succession planning, there's no one behind them immediately available to step into the role. What we are hoping to do is see to it that that next generation is located in our hub locations, all the while maintaining certain key people in Washington, D.C. as part of the 2,000 that we retain. We are simultaneously taking account of the present by keeping the key people in Washington, D.C., while also moving to the future by seeing to it that the new locations and the new people and the people that will succeed those in Washington, D.C. will be located in hubs.
So you have five different hubs, and USDA is a very large agency. Will you concentrate some areas of the department in specific hubs, or will they be scattered all about?
Well, it will vary by agency. So the hub locations that we've chosen, Jeff, are already hub locations for some of our agencies, like, for example, APHIS, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, and ARS, the Agricultural Research Service. So we're already got hubs for some of the agencies in the locations that we've chosen. But when we look at the hub cities, what we are intending to do is to put people where it makes the most sense to put them. So for example, with the Forest Service, most of the Forest Service's land is out west. It would make sense that more of our Forest Service would be located in Salt Lake City than Raleigh, North Carolina, given its footprint. Similarly, when we look at our Agricultural Research Service, we want to concentrate them in hub locations closest to the vast number of labs that they already have. And we're taking into account where our agencies are currently located and building on those capacities, even if it might not formally be a hub location. I'll give you a couple of examples of that. In Athens, Georgia, we have a key Forest Service office location that we intend to build on to help to be a center for the southeastern United States when it comes to forestry. And I suspect we will be seeing similar things with regard, for example, to our Food and Nutrition Service and its some of its regional offices, like, for example, the one in Texas, that it may make sense to keep and build upon there, even though it's not a formal hub location. And that, of course, goes back to what Secretary Rollins said when she initiated the reorganization. We need to take an assessment of our footprint and locate people where it makes sense. And just because something hasn't been designated a formal hub does not mean that we are not going to be locating more people there. All of that will come to fruition this year.
Judge, there's been a number of people that can appreciate the fact that buildings that aren't full, that there is a need to downsize. But research is so critical to agriculture, and to hear of what is a revered site, Beltsville, being shut down, Is the USDA closing the doors on research, or how do they evaluate the closing of the Beltsville facility?
No, Jeff, we're guaranteeing its future by closing Beltsville and moving it to the 90 plus other modern research facilities that the Agricultural Research Service has across the nation. I mean, if you were to go back 5 or 6 decades, Beltsville was at the top of the pile. But over the past decades, because of inadequate funding from Congress and mismanagement on USDA's part, it's a two-way street there, of the more than 400 buildings on the Beltsville campus, which is thousands of acres in size in suburban Maryland, more than 250 of those buildings, Jeff, are waiting to be torn down. And the buildings that are occupied by our research scientists have copious leaks, and the hazards to the employees have gone to the point that last year, the Office of Special Counsel issued an investigative report that found that there were hazards to our employees continuing to remain there, and that these hazards were largely caused by inadequate funding. To modernize just 11, keeping in mind that there are more than 400 buildings on Beltsville's campus, to modernize just 11 of them would cost several $100 million. We don't have that type of money, and agriculture doesn't have time to wait for us to modernize facilities that are falling apart when we have 90-plus facilities that they can be relocated to. Now, we're going to do this thoughtfully. We're not going to do it in one sudden movement. We're going to go experiment by experiment of everything that is happening on the Beltsville campus, and we're going to pick which of our 90-plus facilities that we have across the country is the best place to house each experiment. But for the future of agricultural research and innovation, this has to be done. I would encourage anyone who wants to see the current state of Beltsville to either go to my Twitter page, at DepSecVaden, or the USDA reorganization page, usda.gov/reorg, and you can see video footage of what the current state of Beltsville is. And the saddest part about that video is, even though it's more than 5 minutes in length, we could have made that video 20 plus minutes and still not have gotten through all the footage of leaking pipes, decrepit buildings. There was even a building which we didn't have room to put in the video where literally there is a tree growing through the center of it. Literally a tree. We can't ask our scientists to do cutting edge research in buildings that are falling apart. And under this administration, we're not going to. We're going to put them in the modern facilities the taxpayer has paid for throughout the rest of the country.
In my job, I work closely with market analysts and those who are helping to work inside and around the market. Two points of consensus I would share with you from a number of those that I've spoken with. Number one, they don't want Lance Honing's job. They don't want the responsibility for calling the size of the crop each year. But if you, but if you look at 2024, in the final of January of 25, there were some major changes. And then as we look into January of 26, again, there were major changes, and the industry certainly was confused by it. Are we losing credibility with the Department of Agriculture, with the reports that we offer for industry and for the globe? And is a part of that a lack of staff?
To answer your second question is no. When we look at the people who put out the WASDE, they've got the same or similar staffing levels that they've always had. And you mentioned 2024 and years prior. Those, of course, were not under this administration, and that was in an era where the department was vastly growing in terms of employment numbers beyond its budgetary capability even. So clearly it's not staff that's the issue. I hear the same concerns that you do. I know the secretary does as well, Jeff. My response is twofold. Number one, we pay our statisticians to do one thing, to be right. We don't pay them to tell us what we want to hear. We pay them to tell us what we need to hear. So if ultimately the report that came out is trued up and we've got a corn crop that large, Well, we needed to hear it, and they've done their jobs, and we should thank them for it. But I agree with you, and I agree with the criticism, that it cannot just be that we have USDA experts sitting behind a lockup wall, issuing numbers, and then market experts like you and I talk to having questions about why the adjustments were made, and there being no dialogue between those two sides. That's why in calendar year 26, well before this report was issued, our agencies were already aware that things were going to be changing with this crop year's report. And they're going to be changing in two ways. Number one, USDA at the end of the crop year is going to issue a public report. And that public report will do three things. Number one, it will analyze where we got the data right and, of course, brag on ourselves for doing so. Number two, if there are areas where our estimates miss the mark, we will identify those forthrightly. And number three, we will explain why, if we miss the mark, we did so. Now, one reason you might miss the mark might be a late in growing season weather event that reduced yields or increased yields, as the case may be. It's really hard to, unless you're God, to predict such things. But on the other hand, there may be some errors that would crop up that are systemic in nature, are prone to repeat themselves, and we need to take into account of that in future years and perhaps adjust our methodology. It's important that we talk to the public about where we do our best work and where we can improve. And this report, which I have asked our statistical agencies to put together at the end of every crop year, will be step one in that. Step two in that is I believe it's important that there be a dialogue, not just on paper, but in person. That's why when you attend the Ag Outlook Forum in February of this year, there will be a panel where representatives from our statistical agencies will talk about the predictions that they have made, the estimates that they have made. They will explain why these changes occurred, and then members of the audience will be able to question them in a question and answer session. We should welcome transparency. We should welcome accountability. The market and experts have these questions. It's our experts at USDA's job to answer them, and I'm setting up a process where we can do this on an ongoing basis every year going forward.
There's also the element of technology, and we have a lot more at our disposal today than we've had in the times past. In the spring, when I met with the staff of the NRCS, they were in hopes to have greater technology and the use of their hands. The question is, with these reports moving forward, does there need to be new methodology based on new methods of being able to draw data for what's in the field?
We need to improve our technology at USDA department-wide. We are, like the rest of the federal government, decades behind where the private economy is. Fortunately, under Secretary Rollins' leadership, we have appointed a new chief information officer at USDA. He came from DOGE, and he is currently at work reforming our systems enterprise-wide, and the place he started was farm production and conservation, the FPAC mission area. That's, of course, where all the farmers file their data. It's still largely, in 2025, a paper-based process, as every farmer knows. You have to go to your local FSA office. They pull out files out of a filing cabinet. You've got to review them and sign it, and this is 2025. Our goal is to get rid of the paper, bring in the computers, and to the extent possible, allow producers to ultimately access this information, not from an FSA county office where they have to visit in person in order to do anything, but perhaps from their own home computer. Now, we've got some models that our chief information officer is testing. He's obviously showing them to the secretary and other departmental leadership, and we're hoping over the next 3 years to roll these things out, working on platforms that talk to one another, that are modern, and that are farmer-focused. And we can't say that in any of our mission areas currently. So we've got a big job ahead of us, but that's why we've made the change at the chief information officer role, because we've got to think more like a private business and stop acting like government.
Judge, let's move over to policy now. And in the Big Beautiful Bill Act, there were many elements of the Farm Bill that were brought closer to an economic reality of farming today. But there are still elements that have not been addressed. With a broad view question, a broad stroke, what's in the remaining policy that could assist producers, that could assist rural America today?
Well, first, it's important to note that thanks to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, we got some permanent new farm policies. We've raised reference prices to reflect the greatly increased cost of production so that we have a real permanent farm safety net going forward for the first time in years. And we have made the advantageous tax provisions that farmers depend on, like immediate expensing of purchasing new farm equipment or investing in grain silos or what have you, permanent. Those no longer have an exploding clock on them. So it's important not to forget that. But there are some things, thanks to Senate procedure, that we could not get through in reconciliation. And one of the most important you have already mentioned, that is increased loan rates to reflect the increased cost of production. That will take a so-called skinny farm bill. And my hope is that members of Congress in both the House and Senate will focus on pieces of policy like that. I've yet to hear anyone from either side of the aisle, frankly, that opposes increased loan limits and other smart reforms to agricultural policy, and spend less time focusing on things they disagree with, package up the items that have widespread support, and pass that through the Congress so we can move forward with better farm policy. But we need our congressional partners to work with us. I'm hopeful that they will do so. And of course, USDA stands ready to provide whatever economic data or legal technical assistance they may need to get them there.
Information provided from the Trump administration about the Bridge Assistance Program. Could you update us on the process and the form that those payments and the timing of those payments?
Well, a lot of questions there, Jeff. I'll try to address them all. With our Bridge Assistance Program, we basically saw ECAP, the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, as the model to emulate. And so the process that producers will end up going through will feel a lot like ECAP. We intend to have ready for them by the end of next month a form that will already be pre-filled out with all of the data necessary to receive the bridge payment. All producers will need to do is visit their county office, confirm the information is correct, and affix their signature on the bottom line. And then, just a couple of business days after that, just like ECAP, they'll get a direct deposit to their checking account. We want to make this as easy as possible. We also wanted, while we're doing all this work behind the scenes currently of getting these forms ready, our Farm Service Agency is quite busy at the moment, we wanted the rates that farmers will receive to be public. Those were published on New Year's Eve, so that their bankers, who, as you noted, are now engaged in discussions about loan terms for this coming growing season, they will be able to easily calculate how much each farmer will receive in bridge payments, put that in the balance sheet to the benefit of the farmer in terms of his cash situation as they consider loan conditions and payments going forward. Now, we haven't forgotten the $1 billion that will be set aside for sugar and specialty crops. Our FSA is working on what those calculations will look like, and I expect not too long after bridge payments start flowing at the end of February, we'll be moving forward with implementing the sugar and specialty crop part of the program, and funds will flow for that as well.
Judge Vaden, I want to thank you for being so outspoken and such a supporter of U.S. agriculture and accepting this role now at the department. Thank you for being here and for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and today the judge gets the last word.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure to be on your program. And I just want to close by noting how important this role is to me. I took this role because I still live in rural America. I return home to Union City, Tennessee most weekends. And it's about time that rural America got the policy focus that the urban America and suburban America have for decades and get their fair piece of the pie. And even though I know that the policy process will be grinding, I am happy that we are beginning to tackle difficult generational issues like trade, like opening up new markets, like busting down barriers, both internal here in the United States and external in foreign countries, and taking into account the root causes, like growth in Brazilian agriculture at the expense of the Amazon rainforest. These aren't easy issues to tackle, and all of that on top of a tough budget situation, but we've got to do it in order to ensure that the next generation of farmers can take over from the current generation and continue to build on America's agricultural heritage and innovation. And it's an honor to have been asked to do so and help out as Deputy Secretary at USDA.
Our thanks to USDA Deputy Secretary Stephen Vaden, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of U.S. farmers online at syngentaforag.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Dowling.